Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 147 of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Casey.
Hey, how's it going?
Dude, so Michael is not here. Was supposed to be here.
Seriously, he's been unreliable lately.
Yeah, missed three of the last four podcasts?
It's like three out of the last five, I think.
No, it's three of four, right?
No, because I think that he was here for the...
Oh, that's right. He made back-to-back podcasts. Three of five.
Yeah.
Yep, that's correct. Yeah.
But still, get it together, Michael.
So what do we do? We get another old host on the show, Matt Kling. What is up, my friend?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
The often mentioned Matt Kling, even.
Often mentioned, man.
I think we've actually... This podcast has gone on long enough that we can just start bringing people on that have actually never been on the show and say that they're a former co-host. And nobody would know otherwise.
No, nobody could possibly have that information.
Well, our the first handful of podcasts aren't out in the world, right? Those are...
Yeah, I think the first 10 are just
are lost to the world.
Lost, yeah.
Yeah, so some number of them.
So they don't basically know who, was on those shows.
Anything that was hosted on the old server actually isn't on the internet.
Yeah, and people don't know who was on those shows.
Yeah, except for people who listened.
Yeah, but those people could easily be unreliable witnesses. who's going to believe them?
I'm just saying, it's not going to hold up in a court of law. So
how's it going, Meckling?
It's going okay.
It's going okay. You've been playing a lot of Magic lately?
I've been playing a little bit of Magic, not nearly as much as I usually do, but it's just kind of the off time for me, so.
Well, let's go into our first segment, #AlwaysImproving. #AlwaysImproving is the point of this podcast. Every week, we want to show you that we, like you, are doing what we can to improve. We believe that if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. There's not a way to stay still in Magic. I think that even the best players in the world, you know, they go play Magic for 2 weeks straight before the Pro Tour to, get the rust off. So, this week in Magic, so I improved Magic and life by really allocating time to Magic, doing different things, really getting ready for that baby, you know? There's only going to be so many hours in the day, and the majority of them are going to be taken up by a screaming, pooping thing. So I got to figure out how to get Magic in there. But... I'm also excited. I think that we are about to start changing the process of playtesting, who we playtest with, and a bunch of stuff. So I'm pretty excited for that and getting a chance to go on this trip to Portland and talk about it with everybody and get feedback in the 12-hour car ride about the playtesting process. And I think that we'll come to, a conclusion of how we want to do it moving forward. And I'm really excited about that. So what about you, Mr. Casey? How did you improve Magic this week?
Mostly just trying to think conceptually, trying to think a little bit outside the box in Magic, think about things that could be good in this new standard format, things that could be good in Modern, not just the things that people are playing now and what's good against them, but kind of concepts in Magic.
Okay. Anything spicy? The back of your mind?
Nothing that I've really feels well fleshed out to me, but I've got a lot that I'm kicking around.
Matt, what about you? What are things that you've done in the past week that might have helped you? I mean, obviously, you were telling me a story about Nahiri something or other.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing a little bit of just kind of off-the-wall testing, just testing different card interactions to see if they work. But I think most of what I've done to improve at Magic is actually just... I get in these modes where I just play Magic way too much, and then any Magic that I play is just kind of half-hearted. So if I actually take a break from Magic for a minute, it will allow me to go back into it with a better mind state where I can actually focus on the games that I'm playing rather than just autopiloting things.
Sure, that makes complete sense. I think that we've all been there and kind of talked about that. Casey has been in that mode this last couple weeks.
I'm just kind of wrapping up my break now. I played some Magic today, watched more coverage this weekend. I'm ready to really dive into it this week, playing some PPTQs next weekend, and then go to Portland in 2 weeks, so.
All right. Well, during this segment, you can always join in if you're a patron of the show by going to patreon.com and, just posting something for the #AlwaysImproving segment. We always invite our patrons to participate. This week, the participation by the patrons, though, is actually they voted on what training grounds we would be doing this week. We like to give them a chance to chime in and decide what kind of shows we'll be doing throughout the throughout every so often. And this week, they voted for this training grounds that I came up with a few weeks ago. So we'll be hearing about that one. Don't forget that every week on the podcast, or as often as we can, not this week, but probably wait till the Pro Tour to do this next. But we have a card of the week brought to you by patreon.com/ccmtg. If you have a, if you're a patron of $3 or more, you can be entered in to win the card of the week. No card of the week this week. I think we want to wait till the Pro Tour to start giving stuff out again. But yeah, it's exciting. If you have won a card of the week in the month of July, however, I believe some Delvers, some Selfish Spirits, and one more we were given out. If you were a winner of those, I'm changing the way that I'm giving them out. I kind of mentioned that I'm giving it out at the end of the month. If you were one of those winners, please shoot an email to ccmtg.info@gmail.com. I'll try and find you, but it would be really helpful if you could do that and just make the email title, card of the week, and I'll search for those emails and I'll get those sent out to you guys this month now. So thank you so much to everybody who did win this month. And if you're interested, don't forget, you can go to patreon.com/ccmtg and be entered to win that by just becoming a patron of $3 or more. Let's do the power ranking. So every week on the show, we talk about Magic, obviously, but we specifically talk about the constructed formats. We like to switch off. We did Standard last week. This week, we'll be doing a Modern, seeing if there was a shakeup. And then we're going to compare it to what's going on in MTGO right now to see if there's a difference between maybe the Classics and Modo. Classics, like Casey and Matt would be happy to tell you, aren't always the best representation of what's going on. However, I am interested to see, because I think the same thing's true about Modo. I think that Modo also is almost never a good representation of what's actually going on or what the best deck is. So when I like to if we cross-check, maybe we'll come up with some interesting results.
Yeah, I mean, they both have their merits and their flaws, right? MTGO is kind of overwhelmingly in favor of less expensive decks, and Classics are such a crapshoot.
Well, and specifically in regards to Modern, there are problems on Modo. Like, certain decks are just not represented at all because they're very difficult to play on Modo, such as Absent Company, which is predominantly considered one of the best decks in Modern, is just not played at all on MTGO. I've probably played 1,000 hours of MTGO and hadn't played against that deck one time.
Yep, exactly. There's definitely, I think that Casey kind of said it exactly right. Like, both have their flaws. You know, that's a huge one for Modo. And then one of the flaws of the Classics is that, like, the best players are likely playing in day two of the Open at that time.
Right, or they're split between the Modern and Legacy Classics, or they just went home if they scrubbed out, right, yeah, or whatever.
And so they just, in general, just don't give it their all, right? Like, they kind of just bring whatever seems like it'd be fun to play or whatever feels good.
All right, so we have three decks tied for fifth place with 5 points for the last two Classics since the new set came out. We have Five Color Aggro. This is the Death Shadow deck. We have Bant Retreat. This is the Casey deck. And we have Jeskai Control, which is also the Casey deck, but not in the good way, in the he thinks it's unplayable way.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't actually look at any of these decks because I unfortunately did this power rankings very quickly. But assuming that it's the Nahiri Emrakul deck, I do think that deck is pretty close to unplayable.
Yeah, so two things. First thing, how over under on the number of spell quellers that you think were in this top 20, in this rankings?
What would I put the over under at?
Yeah.
Well, based on the fact that you're asking me, I'm going to say 2.5.
It is the under. There was, I only saw one. There was one spell queller in one of the Bant Retreat decks.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, I thought so.
It's like, that's exciting.
Yeah. Do you think that's something that, like, he had lying around and he just wanted to test it out at this tournament? Or, like, do you think he was like, I'm going to get people?
I assume that it was a classic fun of, where it's like, yeah, I'll play a spell queller.
Sure.
Let's see how good it is.
So between these three decks, which do you guys think are the best?
For what it's worth, just to harp back on that, I actually think that Spellqueller is 100% modern playable. I don't know if that's particularly the right shell for it, but I would be shocked if that card never sees any modern play.
Dies to Lightning Bolt.
It does die to Lightning Bolt, that's certainly true, but it's still a very powerful effect. It's a huge tempo gain, even
that's
if they
true.
Kill it.
That's true. I would not be surprised to see modern play. It is... It was easily the one of, if not the best cards in the set, when you see the cards, it was like, I think everybody was like, oh, well, this card's insane.
Right. And I mean, Tide Hollow Scholar dies to Lightning Bolt too, but that card still does a thing.
That's true.
Yeah, and this card at least makes them spend the mana on it first. I would think that it would be kind of like a sideboard card if it does see much play in Modern, because I don't think that... I think it's too bad against too many decks. But I could see it being like, if you get like a Tron player Sylvan Scrying, that could be the end of the game.
Yeah. Which of these decks do you guys think between the three of them is like legitimately the best deck for Modern between these, just in general? I think it's the five color aggro deck. I think that deck is actually great, and I've been giving it a hard time for a long time.
I mean, the Death Shadow is a deck that a lot of people consider to be the best deck in Modern and is just a very powerful deck. So I would give it the edge out of those two more fringe decks. But
oh no, we can't compare it to the Modern. They have not. There's
unclassified decks make up 100% of the format in Modern.
Yeah,
excellent.
maybe go to MTG Goldfish. They do a similar thing.
But yeah, back to your question. I also agree. I think that the five color aggro deck is one of the best four or five decks in Modern. So I think that deck is great, and it's just very, very hard to play. It's not so hard to play that you couldn't ever play it, but it's hard to play perfectly.
Yeah, I think that it's real hard to play. I think that it uses a different mindset than like your typical aggro deck. And I know that we have a player in our Constructive Criticism Facebook group that plays the deck a lot, and he says that he thinks that he's the biggest misplay is people just playing it as a normal aggro deck rather than like playing it a little bit more combo-esque.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You can tell when you play against a player that knows what they're doing with the deck versus one that doesn't.
What do you think the key signs of that are?
It's really hard to say. Bobbling at the right time, bobbling the right player, those are all very difficult things to do. I've seen people get really cute with certain things, like lightning bolting themselves so they could cast a Death Shadow early.
And you think that's cute and not good?
No, I thought that was a very good play. That's not something that's intuitive, I don't think. And it was something that I don't see most people do.
Sure.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this deck is actually specifically more a combo deck than not. You're winning with Become Immense and Teemer Battle Rage a lot, and you need to know exactly how to sequence your spells. And I think that usually if you see somebody bolt themselves, it means either they have no idea what they're doing or they know exactly what they're doing.
Right.
there's plenty of times where it's obviously wrong because, you know, that's like... It's straight card disadvantage, and also you're bolting yourself. So it's
you're using the best card in Modern on yourself.
Right, exactly. Like giving your opponent a free bolt. So then if your opponent then bolts you, you're at zero life.
Yeah, I'm certainly not suggesting that was something that you should do all the time. But in the particular game that we were playing, it was very powerful.
But knowing when to do it. If your opponent does it, and then, you know, their next turn they play two Death Shadows, and you're dead... Then it was, you know, it was something that they thought about, saw the line, and took it.
Casey, you have been a huge proponent of Jeskai Control in Modern. You don't like the current rendition, but you're also currently in love with this Bant Retreat deck.
That's true. So I do love Jeskai Control in Modern. I think it's one of my like favorite decks I've ever played as far as a fun perspective. I don't know that it's ever been very good. It's always been kind of around. It's always been viable, but never... really where you wanted to be in Modern. And I think that this Nahiri deck is just too awkward. You just have too many games where you're just not really a participant. And that's not where I want to be in Modern. But I think that there is maybe a shell for Nahiri. I just don't know that it's this one. And I think that there is a way to play Jeskai Control that could be viable in Modern because the format has shaken up quite a bit. I just don't know that it's this either. I don't know that this is the right marriage for either side.
Okay. And the Bant deck?
Also, like, it's a deck that kind of helped me get over my Splinter Twin withdrawals. Getting, you know, turn 3 and 4 kills. And I think that it's very good because people both never and also shouldn't play around the combo kill because you have so many other ways to beat them fair that it's just like playing Teemer Twin where, like, if you played around combo and just lost a Tarmogoyf like a chump,
I mean, for what it's worth, like, if you're staring at a Knight of the Reliquary and you have a removal spell, you should probably kill it, right? Like, that's true whether they're playing a combo or not.
That is true.
I honestly think that the deck is... I think the word sweet just is correct, right? Like, I mean, there was one in the top 8, one took 9th this week. The one in the top 8, I believe, was the one with the Spell Queller. or no, it wasn't the one. Oh yeah, it was the one in the top eight. So overall, like, I think that the deck does a thing. How many collected companies were you playing?
I was playing three at States.
How many do you think is correct?
Probably either three or four. I think you can kind
of
build it.
This deck has lots of new cards. This deck has Thalia, too.
Yeah, Thalia is one that I could really see being very powerful. It's a powerful card, and I think it doesn't really, like, it fits well into what this deck does as far as its fair game plan.
What are you hoping to play against with this deck, Casey?
Like the Junds of the world, mid-range decks that have a hard time with aggro decks, and where you can just kind of value them out. And then also, like, you're faster than most of the combo decks, so if you have the right half of your deck for any given matchup, you can be in pretty good shape. But it's about drawing the right cards for the right matchup. If you're playing against Jund with a bunch of Abrupt Decays, you don't really want all of your retreats and stuff like that, because that just leaves you very exposed. So, that's kind of the deck's biggest strength and weakness, I would say. It's very easy to draw the wrong half of your deck.
Coming up next with 6 points, winning the event this weekend, we have Dredge. It has four Shriekhorn in it. Matt?
Yeah, I think Shriekhorn is fine. I've played against a lot of different variants of this deck. I don't think that the overarching strategy is, like, great, but I think it's serviceable.
Doesn't it lose a lot on Modo?
No, it does reasonably well on Modo. I mean, it loses and wins a lot. It's just a very played deck on Modo.
Yeah, it is extremely popular on Magic Online. In any given league that I've played in Modern, I played this, like, against this deck on average twice.
What's the reason that you would play against this deck so much? Like, is it just the love of Dredge? Is it the cost of Dredge? Like, what causes people to play this deck when it's been around for a long time? People have played Dredge in Modern for forever. What was printed that made this deck go up so much?
I mean, it was two things. The Grave Troll was recently unbanned not that long ago, and then Insolent Neonate was printed in Shadows Over Innistrad,
mm-hmm.
which is, it's just kind of one of the pieces that the deck was missing, a way to really start the Dredge engine.
I mean, the Neonate is fine. It's actually the Prized Amalgams that did it, though, by, like, a lot. That's the most powerful card in the Dredge deck, and I don't think it's even close. Like, it leads to such explosive starts. It's kind of ridiculous sometimes. I've had my opponent put in 8 power on turn 1.
So the Prized Amalgam, by the way, is a card from Shadows. That's 1, a blue, and a black. It's a 3/3. And whenever a creature enters the battlefield, if it entered the battlefield from a graveyard... sorry, I can't read this.
What it does is when your Blood Gas come into play from you playing a land, it also comes into play with it on your end step.
Yeah, in addition to your Narcomoebas.
Oh, sure.
Yes. That's what I thought it did, but I wanted to read it word for word.
So, yeah, it's really powerful because...
Why is the text so small on this screen?
It just keeps coming back, right? Similar to Bloodghast, but instead of being a dinky little 2/1, it's a 3/3, and, like, it can really get in there. And it's so hard to keep these creatures off the table.
I was going to ask if Neonite saw play in a lot of these newer versions, but it looks like it does in this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually just, like, better than Faithless Looting a lot of the times because you get to discard first.
Mm-hmm.
What I found interesting about the list that actually did win, though, was that it was actually playing Bridge from Below's, which the very first incarnation of the deck did play Bridge from Below, but then they kind of went away from that because it's not usually that powerful. The only thing that you have in the deck that actually synergizes with it directly is the Insolent Neonates. Other than that, you're actually counting on your opponent to kill your creatures, and if they ever chump block with anything, your bridges just go away.
Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't seem extremely powerful to me. I would be curious as to how good Justin found them, because... Yeah, the deck doesn't have the sort of...
I guess he does have the Greater Gargadon. Which was originally part of the combo in the first incarnation of this deck. I did forget about that.
Okay.
There you go. Sure. So that does spice it up a little bit and make Bridge from Below a little bit more relevant. But
Is this list special, Matt? Is this list so different that you're, like, taking a second look at it?
Yeah, it's a little bit different. Like, this is actually a lot more similar to the very first incarnation of the deck, except that one was more about Stitch Wingscob and things like that. I don't know. Personally, I feel like the biggest weakness of this deck is consistency issues to begin with. So adding something like Greater Gargadon to go along with your Ridge from the Lows just seems to add to that more than fix that problem.
Sure. Well, let's go to the next deck we have. Coming with 7 points, we have Merfolk. It was interesting. There was a player in the Facebook group this week that talked about how he got into Modern, bought Merfolk, and a lot of people made fun of him for it. We've been a pretty big advocate for Merfolk for months and months on this podcast, Casey.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it a lot. Even going back to the earliest days of me playing Modern, I played Merfolk at a couple of tournaments.
I think that is one of those decks that's like always on the back burner for me, that like if I think that the format is exactly right, I would play this deck.
Yeah, I think that it's a totally viable deck. I think you could win any given tournament with it. Like, you just have to hit the right matchups, which is true of any deck in Magic and in Modern especially. I think that Spreading Seas is insane in some matchups where, like, you know, what creatures you're playing kind of don't matter, but like Spreading Seas is just great. But also, like, you put a clock on with the deck.
Yeah, it's similar to, I think Green White Tokens might be a good example of like something that like kind of has the same kind of clock where it's like dinky
2, 5, 50.
No. I think it's more like 2, 1, 2, 20. It's like, what just happened to me? And like Green White Tokens will do that sometimes, where it's just like attack you for 2, attack you for 2, attack you for 12. It's like, what just happened?
That escalated so quickly.
And I think that Merfolk does that a lot. Matt, thoughts on Merfolk?
Yeah, I mean, I think Casey hit it right on the head. I think that it's just the best Spreading Seas deck. Spreading Seas is very nice in the deck because not only can it mana screw your opponent, but it's a nice tempo play even if it doesn't completely shut them off from casting their spells. So it's just enough to slow them down and also to put the clock on them.
Do you guys remember when this deck didn't play Aether Vial for like a long time?
So I've heard about that recently. Somebody told me this, and I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, for a long time in Modern, they weren't playing Aether Vial in Fish.
That's interesting. I would wonder what the kind of the reason for that would be. I don't remember. I feel like I played it when I played in it for like Grand Prix Portland 2 years ago or 3 years ago, maybe by now. I played a Grand Prix trial with Merfolk, and I know I was playing Aether Vials that day, or at least I'm 95% sure I was, and I didn't like invent the deck, so I don't know. Maybe it was like half the decks were playing it and half of them weren't, but I don't know what you would play over it.
I mean, the idea, I guess, is that your Aether Vials really make your great hands better, but they're not going to do a lot if you're like on a double mulligan, you know? If you end up with not enough cards in hand, it doesn't really matter. Like, the tempo that you gain by being able to Aether Vial them on their turn and play one on your turn isn't really like enough to warrant the card.
Right. If you're now out of spells.
Right.
Overall, I think that we're just as high on Merfolk now as we've ever been. There are some things that like you can't make up, and like Merfolk playing its weird lands is one of them.
Right. Yeah. The mana base in this deck is straight nonsense. Like, there's no disputing that. I mean, this deck plays 14 blue or 15 blue sources and wants to play double blue spells on turn 2.
It's like every
mono blue deck in history has terrible mana.
It plays the Water's Edge, and this one plays Palace in the Clouds.
Yeah, most of them will play just the random blue lands that don't have any drawbacks, just play around choke.
Yeah, sometimes it'll be stuff like Seagram Coast.
Yeah, and you see a lot of that.
Sometimes it's like a bunch of Wanderwine Hubs because you basically always have a Merfolk, and if you don't, you know, you're going to lose anyway, so it doesn't really matter if your land's coming to play tapped.
Yeah, the last rendition I was playing a couple Dark Slick Shores and the Minamo and the Aboro. The Dark Slick Shores I actually liked because it did actually save me a couple points of damage off my Dismembers, so it seems it's just strictly better than playing the Wanderwine Hubs or the Seachrome Coast to me.
Some of them play... I have seen ones that like play Seachrome Coast and Glacial Fortress, and then they play like Path to Exile out of the board.
Right. So the problem I have with that, and I've given this actually a lot of thought because I do have a player that plays Merfolk at the store that I was talking to about this, and he said that he can't figure out why nobody plays the blue-white version because he feels like it's just strictly better. And the thing I was thinking about is it actually does hurt your Spreading Seas game plan if you are Path to Exiling their creatures. Like, it's kind of a nombo, right?
It is. Somebody who's played a bunch of Path to Exile Blood Moon decks, I definitely get that, because it is a nombo, but usually, like, it's about picking your battles. Just because you have the card doesn't mean you need to cast it. So, you, like, if you've already got the mana screwed and they only have one dinky little creature, you know, go ahead and don't path it. So, but you just have to kind of exercise judgment. I don't know that it's better because you junking up your mana and leaving yourself more exposed to things like Blood Moon or, you know, just the fact that, like, if you have the right, if you have the exact right combination, it can be kind of like mulliganing because you can't actually cast your paths because you can't give them the mana. So, like, there are arguments for and against it. I think that would be a metagame decision more than a blanket rule.
Coming up next with 10 points, we have Burn. This deck is good. I don't have a lot to say about Burn.
Yeah, it's been kind of on vacation for quite a while. Nobody's really played Burn in a while. I wonder why.
Global warming?
Sure. the damage is already done. We're already burned up.
I certainly think that the rise in popularity of Suicide Zoo certainly leads to a rise in popularity of Burn. In addition, the lack of representation of certain other decks on the power rankings makes it pretty obvious, I think, why Burn is doing well this week.
Yeah, I think the Burn is a good deck, and there are formats where it's a great deck. It's like, I think there are formats where it's the best deck. Going into the Modern Pro Tour, I actually expected Burn to be the best deck. Obviously, Eldrazi had something to say about that. And
Chalice of the Void had something to say about that.
Yeah. Overall, I think the deck is quite good.
Even beyond that, you'd be surprised at how often, like, just a turn two Thought Knots here was just too much for Burn to beat.
Yeah.
In a turn, eventually, Reality Smasher is just always too much, so that makes sense.
Right.
So, overall, I think the deck is quite good. I don't have a ton to say about it. Like, it is what it is. I think that the days of the bump in the night version of the deck are far, far behind us, Matt Kling. I can't believe that was a thing once.
Yeah, so the thing is, like, the addition of Wild Mikado makes them better as a deck, I think. I think that it makes them a lot worse in their bad matchups, but you're probably just on the, you know, my Abzan Company matchup's just not that good, so why am I going to try to make a deck that's slightly better against that while losing percentages in everywhere else, even though I'm probably only 75 or 25% to beat that deck anyway?
I have a legitimate question. What is the point in playing this deck over, like, something with Burning Tree Emissaries?
Well, so that's, again, you're better off against decks that are trying to block and against removal with this particular version. The Burning Tree Emissary versions are even worse against the Collected Company decks. They're probably slightly worse against Jund, too.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that most of the time this deck is going to have a better matchup against basically every deck than, like, the Burning Tree Emissary, Reckless Bushwhacker, or Goblin Bushwhacker decks.
8-whack!
I think this is just a better deck than that. And the fact that you
but
only...
But does it have as good of a name?
No.
Not even close.
Not close. But I think the fact that you only need to rely on your creatures for, like, 6 to 8 points, as opposed to in that deck where you need to rely on your creatures for 14 to 15 points.
Sure. I'm just saying, like, Atarka's Command is easily the best card in the deck. So, I mean, that's the reason for the inclusion of Wild Mikado. So, I don't know. Overall, though, either way, whichever version, however you're casting your Naya spells, I think the deck is good. I think that good is the perfect, like, it's good. It's going to win events.
Yeah, I mean, people who are caught unaware, people who are playing Death Shadow, people who are playing Infect, like, there's a lot of situations where you're a pretty big favorite. If your opponent fetches, shocks, thought seizes you, and then sees a handful of lightning bolts and goblin guides, they feel pretty ridiculous.
Absolutely, and I actually think that Burn has fallen off prior to this last 2 weeks so much that people have forgotten about it, and you can tell that with the way that the Infect decks are tuned these days. Nobody's playing anything like Wild Defiance or anything to even try to combat the Burn decks.
Yeah, I, and that happens. That's like, it's kind of like your classic case, right? It's just, how do we go through this cycle all the time?
Because they only give us 15 sideboard cards.
There's not enough Willy Adels in the world.
I don't even know what that reference means.
Well, he has the Spencer Howland approach to deck building. I refuse to lose to aggro first. That's his first rule of deck building. I think that Casey falls under that one too, right?
It depends. I cheat a lot on my sideboard cards. I always say that I'm not going to, and then I do it anyway.
When was the last time you cheated against Infinity? Hey. Never again?
The last time I played Modern.
You broke your pact.
Yeah,
we took a blood oath, Casey Bloodworth.
Yeah, I totally.
That means something to me.
I got crushed by Affinity in that tournament.
Oh my gosh! Of course you did. Of course you did. We took a blood oath. You know, we were going to drive to Vegas together.
That's true. After we both got trounced in a tournament by Affinity in Boise, we were going to drive like all day to get to Vegas to play in a PTQ the next day.
So the problem was we were using my wife's car to get to Boise, and she needed it. So we were calling everyone we knew with a car and being like, hey, do you want to go to a PTQ tomorrow? Hey, do you want to go to a PTQ tomorrow?
Yeah. Hey, well, I called Quentin, and before hello, he said, I'm not going to Vegas.
So I don't know that we were degenerates. I actually think our decks were great.
Yeah, I agree. I think that like we got pretty unlucky to get bounced by Affinity in that tournament. Like, and that was like kind of the beginning of the people playing like insane sideboard cards in Affinity. Because Affinity sideboards before were kind of considered like, you know, play whatever, play some Edge Champions, play some who cares what. Like, your main deck is good.
That was the beginning of the Thoughtseize, Spells, Pierce,
Mizzium Skin, whatever. People interact, Affinity players interacting with you. It was the dawn of that era.
So, we should have gone to Vegas. What? We could have rented a car. What's our problem?
We're idiots.
We're stupid. What?
No, just Mizzium Skin out of the sideboard of Affinity. I haven't seen that yet, but that's a spicy one.
I actually believe that's what we both lost to.
It crushed me.
Anyway. Yeah, so speaking of Affinity, coming in at number one with 16 points, we have Affinity. This deck is I think that it's actually good for Modern.
Well, it depends. I think that there are merits. I think that there does need to be this threat of you need to be a responsible deck builder. And whether, you know, in Legacy, this role is kind of played by Charbelcher and Storm and decks like that. In Modern, we can't get quite that degenerate. And this is the next best thing, right? Where, like, you have to be a human being when you're building your deck. You can't just play whatever.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of the beauty of Legacy, right? Is that, like, you have to respect certain things. And I think that I know a lot of people hate the Affinity tax. I mean, you just broke our blood oath, so.
Yeah, I mean.
And you got punished for it. Like, you immediately regretted that decision.
Yeah, I mean, luckily my tie breaks were great, so I still top eighted that tournament.
But you jumped into that bear den. And
yeah, as I was building the deck, I was like, I'm going to lose so hard into Affinity. And then I played against Affinity in what I thought was my win-in round, and I was like, I deserve this.
This is something that I could have prevented.
Exactly.
And I think that that's great for the format. Let's talk really quick
Did we actually look at any of these Affinity decks to see if they had any new cards? Like, was anybody experimenting with a Lupine
prototype?
Yeah, prototype or anything like that?
Dude, if somebody's doing that, I'm gonna be tilted. I'm gonna be tilted. All right, this is just you. This is just your typical Affinity deck.
I assume that most of them are.
I am so anti Welding Jar. Can I just? Can we all get on our? Is anyone here pro Welding Jar in Affinity?
Absolutely. Actually, I think that card has been the one I've lost to out of Affinity more than any other card because I usually have removal for their stuff, and Welding Jar just like if you have Welding Jar plus like
why not just play a Spell Pierce?
Because Spell Pierce doesn't stop Abrupt Decay.
I see. Casey,
that one costs zero mana.
Where do you land? That's true.
And it's proactive.
And it's an artifact.
So there are pros and cons. I think that one is probably fine, but I wouldn't go higher than that. The reason that I don't like it is because you mulligan a lot with Affinity, and playing cards like Welding Jar is a contributing factor to that.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I haven't played with Welding Jar a lot from the Affinity side, but having played against it a bunch of times, if they play a Cranial Plating and have a Welding Jar in play, I just feel hopeless.
Well, so like if I like said that you should play one copy of every card that Affinity's ever crushed me with, the deck would be all one ofs, right? Like that's
one of Mizzium Skin.
Yeah, one Mizzium Skin, one Thoughtseize, one Spell Pierce, one Remand, you know, whatever. one Bitter Blossom if you're Justin Sloan. Like there's a lot of ways to build Affinity.
Yeah, a couple of one Tarmogoyf.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, somebody tweeted something that they had four. Oh, it was Chris Bakula won a PPDQ with Infect with four Tarmogoyf out of the board.
Yeah, that's actually not so surprising. I mean, they most of them play Kitchen Finks out of the sideboard instead of Tarmogoyf, but it's kind of the same idea.
Overall, are there decks? There are three obvious decks missing from these power rankings. If we're going to talk to you about the modern metagame, I think that the three actual best decks are all missing. Abzan Company, Jundin, Infector, all not here.
Yeah, that is a surprising turn of events, right?
If we look at the Moto metagame, Jund and Infect do make the top five. Jund in first, Infect in fifth. But
an Abzan Company,
it's not fair.
For logistic purposes, it just isn't playable on Moto.
Yeah. So it is making up 2% of the Moto metagame, though.
Which is surprising, because I played against it zero times. Yeah, I've played against it a combined zero times.
That might be all Matt Klein.
That's not even actually 2% of the metagame, either. That's 2% of the 5-0 metagame, which means that the people that are troopers and are playing this deck are doing well with it.
Matt Klein, how many of them are you?
That would be zero. I have never 5-0'd a league with this deck, because nobody ever concedes to infinite life. I have 4-1 many leagues.
Well, there are 5-0s people who are doing it. So
I agree. Yeah, no. If you hit the right matchups where you don't actually need the infinite life to win, the deck's still great.
All right,
but I went on so much tilt the last time I played that deck in a league because I was 4-0 and then I crushed this guy 2-0. Like in paper, it would have been over, right? Not his fault. Like he doesn't have to concede to infinite life. It's fine. But he had an Elspeth Sun's Champion in play, and we're doing the math. I have more cards in my deck than he does. We're doing the math on how much life I would have to gain to beat this Elspeth Sun's Champion with him having 39 cards in his deck, and it's over 13,000 life is how much damage that Elspeth could deal me in that game. I was like, okay, well, there's no way that I can click that many times, so obviously this deck is...
You can't Kitchen Fink 6,500 times.
I'm surprised that they can't code, do this sequence infinite times.
I mean, they absolutely could do that. It's amazing that they haven't done that.
Is it amazing that they haven't done it? I'm super pro Wizards, but,
So if they do that, then I will never play another deck online other than Abzan Company. But right now, I'm just playing Jund.
So it does seem like a coding nightmare. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm usually pretty critical of Wizards, but that seems actually pretty impossible.
Not really though, right? They already have tons of games where you can set up a macro, right? You just set it up to where you're click these keys this many times or whatever. It would be exactly like setting a macro for anything else, right?
But each combo would kind of have to have its own macro, right?
Sure, they could just make it to where you set your own macros, though, right? Even if it would just allow me to.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Hit one button that would just combo
This is now completely outside the realm of the modern metagame, but it is interesting. What is going on that the best three decks in modern aren't on our top five, but they are in Moto.
Yeah, so I mean, it's kind of what we talked about right at the beginning, and why I do always say to take classic results with a grain of salt. It's not that this data is irrelevant, but it's that you have to be cognizant of it. That don't just say, "Oh, this is the Affinity is the best deck in Modern because it did the best over these two weekends," or that Dredge is a great deck, which Dredge is a fine deck, but representation is strange in the classics. There might not have been one person playing Jund, just because those are the people who happen to make day two or go home early.
Sure.
Which is just if it's a modern open, people, it'll be more representative of the metagame. But
what
a classic.
What do you think of Jund being number one on Moto, Matt Kling? How good do you think Jund is?
I think that deck is amazing right now. I think it's.
That's the deck you're on right now in Modern, right?
Yeah. I probably am on Abzan Company just because I think I play the deck a little bit better, but I would certainly not fault anybody for playing Jund. I think that Jund is probably the best deck. It's very close for me between those two. But yeah, Jund is as good now as it's ever been. Next to perhaps when Deathrite Shaman was a card.
Casey?
Well, actually, only specifically when Deathrite and Bloodbraid Elf were a card, because Kalidus is pretty oppressive right now.
I mean, I literally played Deathrite Jund with Bloodbraid Elf, and it was the...
Yeah, I mean, obviously that was... things needed to be banned, right?
But. No. No, that was just a great time. I don't know what you're talking about.
So it was Deathrite Shaman that put it over the top. Bloodbraid Elf was great. Deathrite Shaman is too good.
They banned Bloodbraid Elf first because they're stupid.
Yeah.
I actually don't see any reason to have Bloodbraid Elf be banned. I actually don't even know that this version of Jund would play that many Bloodbraid Elves.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually pretty convinced that Kalidus is better than Bloodbraid Elf.
Anyway, Casey, where are you at in Modern? What deck would you play tomorrow? Are you still on Scapeshift?
I am very frustrated with Scape Shift right now. I don't think that I would play that just out of tilt.
Okay.
Just because it's so easy to lose to random decks with Scape Shift that I'm off it right now.
Even at a PPDQ level where you don't really play against that many random decks?
I don't know. I haven't played in a modern PPTQ in a long time. So I would probably have to play in a couple before I felt comfortable.
Sure.
I would consider playing Jund. In fact, is where I would lean the most heavily. But if the metagame is as Jund heavy locally as Matt tells me it is, then that's probably not a wise choice. If I were really trying to spike it, I would probably play Tron. But
wow.
I don't hate myself.
I was going to say, you must hate yourself right now. I love Tron. I think that it's a blast. I have a list if you want one.
How many Ulamogs does it have?
Some number.
You know that's the deck that Danny just won yesterday with, right?
No, that makes sense. I think that deck's great.
I mean, if people are playing Jund all day, like, Tron is just, it's an insane matchup. Like,
yeah. For me, I am back on Rug. I don't know what happened. I'm pretty unhappy with Bring to Light, Scape Shift. Tron is fun, but like I know that I was on Tron, I think, two times ago when we did Modern. But honestly, like, there's nothing like Rug Scape Shift. Nothing like it, Magling. If I wasn't playing that, I do have a Jund list that I'm super high on. It's I love it, and I think that Jund is actually the best deck in Modern right now. I think I agree with Matt on that. So
if Jund is so good, at what point does it, and so good and so popular, at what point does it become wise to start playing Absent, try to gain the edge in the mirror?
I don't think that that's actually true anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the amount that Jund can utilize Kalidus versus the amount that Abzan can is just, it's night and day.
I think that Colgan's Command plus Kalidus is better than just having Lingering Souls.
Right. I mean, Seedrina was also a very good card in the mirror, but
it's true.
But like I said,
if you're telling me that I can play, you know, Jedi Jund, I'm all for it. Like, I have one of those lists too, if you need one.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you could splash Lingering Souls for the mirror.
Lingering Souls and Seedrina splash. Mm-hmm.
I certainly don't think that you want to play that many fours. Certainly not with Dark Confidants.
You don't have to convince me to cut Dark Confidants.
Kalidus is just so much better in the mirror than any other card that it's just. Jund is just better than Abzan right now.
I think so too.
Fair enough.
Let's move on to our training. As every week on this podcast, we talk about something that's going to either improve you at life or magic. Hopefully magic, but life in general happens quite a bit. We talk about things that people come back to us and say that we actually have listeners who don't play magic that just skip to the training grounds. This is factual. So
sweet.
Don't forget that the training grounds is brought to you by Oasis Games. You can check them out at oasisgamesslc.com. You get 15% off your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout, and you get 4% off every order by using the code Would That Be Good. This week, voted on by the patrons, we're talking about It All Counts. So a lot of Magic players think that you have to do extreme playtesting or play in every single event every single week to improve at Magic. This week, I'm here to tell you that that's not true. Casey, how often does Magic stress you out?
Not that much anymore because I try to be proactive about not getting stressed out by it. It used to stress me out a lot, though.
Yeah, we were actually talking today during playtesting, and I mentioned that I wish that my actual Magic record was as good as my playtesting record. Matt asked why I think that I do so much better in playtesting. And I think the reason is just comfort. I have a really bad mental disorder, and Magic tournaments give me really bad anxiety. I play so much worse. Like, I'll make usually it's about two misplays a tournament that are like pretty horrendous. In my opinion, to some people, they tell me that they're not, but like, to me, it's like, no, I would have never done that in a playtesting match. And I honestly, like, I think that Magic is really stressful for a lot of people. Matt, have you been stressed out by Magic in your life?
I don't know. That's a hard question to ask or to answer for me. I wouldn't say that I've been directly stressed out by Magic. No.
Do you feel like you've ever put yourself in a situation where you put so much emphasis on winning a specific tournament?
Yeah, I've certainly done that. I mean, even just recently, I put a lot of emphasis on trying to qualify for Pro Tour Sydney, and that didn't work out. But
Okay. And is that not stressful for you when it doesn't, like when something goes wrong, is it not something that stresses you out or makes you feel anxious?
Not really.
Well, that's fair. Like that, everybody's different. So.
Yeah.
I know that I and Casey have both felt it, but I think that, like, I know that Quentin, that's something that he used to struggle with and now does not. He doesn't get stressed out at Magic tournaments as much anymore. And it could be something that, like I said, every individual is different, but I know for me, it's something that I'm currently struggling with.
For me, I had a big turning point when if I didn't want to play in a Magic tournament, I just said that I wasn't going to play in them if I didn't want to, because that was the thing. It was like, I didn't want to play in a tournament, but I felt like I had to. And then I would show up and usually do terrible because I didn't want to be there. So, you know, like, if I want to take a weekend off from Magic, I just do it, and I don't, like...
So, one of the things that I hear a lot of people say is, like, oh, I can't play in this tournament because I don't have time to prepare for it. I really want to play in the tournament, but I can't because I don't have time to prepare. And what is interesting to me is, like, there is so much information out there that I wonder how much preparation a lot of people need to, like... I think if they manage their expectations correctly... If there was an SEG in Salt Lake, but you didn't have time to playtest for it, but you had time to, like, read some articles, listen to some podcasts, watch some videos, and you really wanted to play in that SEG or that GP, I don't see a reason not to do it.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And honestly, no matter how much you playtest something, you're probably not even going to play against the decks that you expected anyway. At least that's been my experience. I mean, playtesting definitely helps, don't get me wrong. I definitely am not advocating don't prepare for a tournament, but I do think that if you want to play in something and you don't have time to physically prepare for it, that's fine.
So something that I want to talk about in this everything counts idea is Matt actually asked me multiple times. He wanted to confirm what I was saying because he didn't quote agree. But I think that you do agree, but you have to be specific about it. So... What I want to bring up is, let's pretend that Magic, you got experience points for everything you did. Would you get double experience points for playtesting versus playing in an FNM mat?
It depends on how you mentally approach things, I think, more than anything.
I completely agree.
I don't think that exactly what you're doing is as relevant as how you're taking it all in mentally. Like, if you're just not in a position, like... Like, it's like I was saying, if I'm playing on autopilot, I'm actually getting nothing out of playing Magic, I don't think.
Yeah.
My disagreement was saying it doesn't all count in some senses. I think that I've done it wrong a lot in the past, and it's not like you could just play Magic for 6 hours and then say, oh, you know, I'm 6 hours better than I was 6 hours ago.
In fact, not only do I mean, that's absolutely true. So, there was a conversation that I had with somebody that brought this training grounds up to me. Where they were like, well, I don't have anybody to playtest with, so I can never get better at Magic. And I was like, well, no, if you approach FNM or Wednesday Night Magic or Tuesday Night Magic or whatever Magic you can play the correct way, it doesn't matter if the other person is, like, it really doesn't matter if the other person is approaching it that way. As long as you're in the correct mental state and trying to learn something and, like, doing the correct things and, like, doing whatever you need to be doing to get better and you're doing it the correct way, that's on you, right?
Yeah, I 100% agree with that.
So there are, like, and it was interesting. One of our patrons, well, there was an article written by Brian DeMars this last week talking about how people shouldn't try and win their local events. They should try and learn at the local events. And it was interesting to me. I was like, so yes and no. You should try and win every event you play in. If things aren't going the correct way for you, if certain things line up a certain way, no matter what's happening, there are two things that I believe are true. You should try and win every event you plan, is one. And two is, every opportunity in Magic is an opportunity to improve. Everything you do in Magic, every match you play is an opportunity to learn something. I think that those are two constants that you should hold true. And the it all counts mentality, that means that every match of Modo that I play, if I'm taking it as a chance to improve, if I'm doing it, we talked about this a little bit last week where I talked about people who watch Magic coverage to correct people rather than to learn and how they're missing out on so much. Because you're going to find misplays. Nobody plays a perfect match of Magic. But if you're taking the approach of like questioning plays, not correcting plays, and trying to learn from them, then you're just giving yourself an opportunity to improve. And that's completely different than the other approach, right, Casey?
Yeah, I mean, if you're not trying to improve, you can't. You have to actually be trying to improve in order to get better at anything.
So if my goal is to try and play perfectly through an event, that's a goal that I should have. And if I'm learning from my mistakes as I'm doing that, and I'm still trying to win the event, I can still go try and win my Wednesday Night Magic, right?
Yeah, so I think that... I haven't read the article, but I would assume that what he was getting at was that learning is more important than winning. So, like, it's not that you shouldn't try to win, it's that you shouldn't, like, break your arm patting yourself on the back for winning the event if you didn't Sure. learn anything from it.
I would agree with that.
So, and I think that that's accurate. So, like, in playtesting, I place the value of winning at pretty close to zero, right? Because I'm trying to learn how the matchup is, how the cards interact, things like that. Where at a competitive tournament, you know, the one I paid money to enter, that I actually have a stake in winning, I place the importance of winning much higher.
Yeah, so something that's actually interesting to me is the number of people who don't allow takebacks in playtesting is astounding. You're not playtesting then.
Yeah.
You're actually just playing.
Yes. Yeah,
you're not testing anything.
I think that you... There needs to be a limit, right? You can't have takebacks that are based on new information.
Sure.
Like, going back a full turn is probably a mistake, because you need to actually learn from... If you played a certain way, you get punished. But I think that, like, oh, I'm going to play Thalia. No, actually, just kidding. I'm going to play this instead. That should be allowed in playtesting, because you should be able to think things through. As long as there's no damage done to the game state, I think that there's no reason not to allow takebacks.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think that there's something to be said about when you're trying out a new deck, obviously you're not going to play optimally right at first, and you might want to try things a little bit differently sometimes, or just realize that your line was just strictly wrong, like, a few seconds later. And I think takebacks there are totally fine, but if you find that you're playing a deck and you keep making these kind of mistakes over and over again in playtesting, like, maybe you should just... Either practice without the takebacks and see if you're still winning, or, you know, maybe try a different deck.
Yeah, and then there does become a point of diminishing returns, though. Like, if you are... Not even diminishing returns, where it's actually just bad. Like, if you're constantly doing takebacks, like, you know, the morning of the tournament, like, you still feel like you're completely unsure as to which way to handle things, that's probably bad. You need to start, like, focusing on trying to pick a play and stick with it. But I think that especially in the, like, exploratory stages of playtesting... Takebacks are not only good to allow, but, like, important to think about.
Yeah, I think that in the it all counts mentality that I'm trying to get out here is, like, is do things the right way. Like, that you don't need six people around you that are, like, I think that if you want to be the best at Magic, you can be. That it is important to surround yourself with similar-minded people. I think that it's a huge, huge benefit, and it will give you leaps and bounds. But if you don't have it, that doesn't mean that you can't get better. Like, that'd be crazy if the only way to get better at Magic was to do these list of things. Now, we preach a certain things on this podcast, right? We preach that you should surround yourself with better, you know, better people, similar-minded people. You should, have this approach of always improving. You should do these things. But as long as you have the right approach to any match of Magic you play, it's an opportunity to improve. As long as you have the approach in any article you read, any podcast you listen to, any video you watch, as long as you're doing it in the right mindset, it counts as the same experience points as anything else would if you were getting XP for it.
Yeah, I agree. And, like, especially when it comes to consuming Magic content... Like, there's a lot of very entertaining Magic content out there that, you know, can bring joy to your life. But if you're trying to get better at Magic, you know, maybe you need to focus more on watching videos from players that are legitimately great and are playing good decks and they're explaining things, rather than somebody who plays Sweet Brews that you like. Because the Sweet Brews will be entertaining, but you might not really get that much out of it. Where watching somebody, like, great Magic players, like... You know.
Well, so actually, I think that's kind of contrary to what we were just saying.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think that watching somebody play Magic, no matter who it is or what they're playing, if you have the right mindset and are looking for the right things out of it, you can get the same exact thing out of it that you would Well, maybe
I think you can get something.
Yeah, you can
but
get
less.
Something out of
I
it.
Think that
yeah.
like
I think that you're going to get different things out of them, not necessarily more or less, because
or better
see,
or worse.
Yeah, you're going to see different interactions out of a brew. Like, you're going to see cards interact in a way you've never seen before. You're going to be thinking about things differently.
Sure, and like maybe variety is important there, but I do think that if you are legitimately trying to learn, you should be giving yourself the most opportunities to do that. And sometimes,
well, that,
content
that's,
that you
well,
consume
that's,
for
I,
entertainment
I think
is not informative.
I think that that's kind of the opposite of the approach that I'm trying to preach here. Is I'm saying that like people with a life, people with these things, like it. That it doesn't, I don't think that at the end of the day that it, I mean, you should obviously try and maximize value, right? Like, obviously that's a thing that you should do if you can. But, like, that doesn't mean that you can't go watch a sweet brew. That you can't learn from a sweet brew. You just have to do it with the right mindset.
Sure, or maybe that's a bad example even, because there's plenty of magic content out there where it's mostly discussing
so,
magic that
yes.
will never make you better.
Yeah, so, like... There are
the talk show podcast, right, where they never talk about magic theory; they just talk about magic,
yeah, or,
as a concept.
Like, yes, like, I think that there are certainly there is content out there that there's probably not a way to approach it that
will make you better at magic.
Yeah, that it's just pure entertainment stuff, and right. that's fine.
That,
those
it certainly has its place,
yes.
but it's not going to make you a better magic player.
So yes, yeah, so I don't think that watching people play magic ever. Like, I've watched games of EDH where I've gotten better at Magic for watching them. And, like I just don't think that, like, if you have the right mindset, that you can ever go wrong.
Sure. I just think, so, like, if you have time to watch one video, I think that...
Right. So, that's what I was saying, is that there's times where you need to realize that, like, if your goal is to do one thing, you should maximize what you can do. But that doesn't mean that the other stuff that you do doesn't count towards you getting better.
Sure, it's not that it has zero value, but I think that I'm just saying, like, if your complaint is really time, how much time you can put into magic,
sure.
you need to maximize the time you can put into it.
And I just said that. I just don't want it to be conveyed that like that we're saying that you can't improve by doing X. Like, I think that if X was listening to a pure entertainment podcast about magic, like where they told jokes about magic cards, like no, you're probably not. There's probably not an approach to that,
right?
But like, yeah, that's so. I think that we're in violent agreement.
Maybe, like, I mean, we can talk about this later. I do have some like specific things that I'm thinking of, but I'm not gonna like put anybody on blast.
Sure.
So I'm not gonna,
they're probably the same. We're probably thinking the same stuff. But Matt Kling, when you play MTGO, what goes into your thoughts on it? Like, is it testing? Is it a gate to something else? Is your Elo rating what you're looking at? Like, what are you doing when you're playing Magic Online?
Well, I certainly try not to look at the Elo rating as the end all be all. But you know, I do occasionally look at those kind of things because I just like to have the validation, I guess. But no, I don't think that that's what you should be going into it. I think that's a lot more of a do as I say, not as I do moment, though, more than anything. I think that you should just go into every match of Magic trying to learn something. For what it's worth, I do actually consider playing on Magic Online playtesting for the most part. Like, let's say hypothetically, I'm playing Jund or whatever, and my opponent is playing Abzan Company. And they assemble Infinite Life Combo and demonstrate the loop, right? I would concede there, because I know if I'm playing Jund in paper, there's no way that I'm going to get away with that, right? Like, my opponent in Infinite Life, I'm not going to win the game. So,
Do you concede on Modo?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. There you go.
Not that I'm suggesting that you need to do that. I'm just saying that's the mindset that I approach it with.
Sure.
I'm generally trying to... Whenever I'm playing Modo,
you're not getting any value from like winning that match.
Exactly.
You are getting value. It's just on the value that's important to you.
Right. Yeah. The four tickets or whatever are usually not that important to me versus the time that I'm spending, like wasting mine and that person's time. It's not even about that. It's the point is I'm usually testing for an event when I'm playing on Modo. Like, for instance, let's say hypothetically this is an event I actually care about though, right?
Okay.
So we're playing in a Mox qualifier or something to that effect now, right?
Okay.
Now, the same situation. I'm playing Jund. My opponent's playing Ebzen Company. He demonstrates a loop, but he looks like he's doing it fairly slowly. Okay, that guy's going to time out. Not going to concede, right?
Yeah, I completely... So it's about the situations you're in.
It's not really so much to do with my morality of it, or that I think that you're like a scumbag or something if you don't concede to somebody that's, you know, can't time or can't.
But your goal is not to win this league match.
Right, exactly.
It's to learn about the Jund deck you're playing.
Exactly. My goal is to prepare for an event, and if I lose that game and then can go on to the next one, that's a better way for me to prepare than trying to win this game that I've already lost.
Casey, how do different things count differently for you? Does FNM count differently to you than a playtesting session, and like the way you approach Magic or you approach them, or just what you can get from them? Like,
yeah. So when it comes to playtesting, like I said, I'm usually trying to learn something about the matchup or the cards or the deck or whatever. Like, I'm trying to get something specific out of it. Where an FNM or like a local tournament is more like a dress rehearsal for the tournament is how I treat it.
Okay.
Like if I have a PPTQ on Saturday, I'll play FNM on Friday with the same deck just to kind of get used to actually holding the cards, playing the deck. And so it's important for me to play my best and to play the deck well enough to win the tournament the next day with.
Is there a thought? So for me, I kind of talked a little bit about kind of how I order things. I think that for me, I don't think I'm going to play an event if I don't want to win it. I mean, that's obviously not true. I just conceded in the finals of a PvdQ. But, like, I had a specific goal in mind, right? Playing for second.
Right. I mean, and you got good value out of that tournament.
Yeah, I did.
So, like... You just had a different, like, winning for you was a different thing.
Yeah, that's true. That might be a good way to put it. But what I'm getting to here is, like, when I go to a pre-release, my goal is obviously to win the pre-release. But that's not why I'm at the pre-release. My goal can be to win, but it's not why I'm there. And I think that that's probably true of most players at FNM. Your goal is to win the FNM, but you're not at FNM to win it.
Right.
You're at FNM to learn about Magic, to improve at Magic, to be around friends, right? And as long as you have the right approach to that FNM, it can be just as valuable as a playtesting session.
Yeah, sometimes more. I mean, your playtesting sessions can get inbred in a lot of different ways, honestly. They can get inbred because of decks that you and your friends all play, or they can get inbred just because you know how each other play. Like, just being able to read your friends is something that just happens. So... it's important to play against a lot of other people.
And also just kind of more fringe strategies, right? Like, we don't have infinite time for playtesting, so we playtest the most relevant matchups. But in any given tournament, like, the top three decks are only going to make up 50 to 75% of
your
tournament.
I literally played against Lunar Force. Is that the name of the card?
Right.
Lunar Force Starfield of Nyx on Wednesday. And I was like, this is so sweet. And it really taxed me mentally to be able to go out and beat that deck. It was really hard. I had to think about a lot of my plays, and that is not something I would have gotten out of a playtesting session. In fact, there's a famous story from the Constructed Criticism podcast where Matt Kling was playtesting for an event, and Casey Bloodworth literally refused to playtest a matchup that Matt wanted to playtest. He said, "Matt, you're never going to play against this deck, and if you do, it doesn't matter, you'll win because the deck is bad." And
I stand by that, by the way. I should have tested it with him, but that deck was bad.
So Matt's like, all right, whatever. Matt gets to the finals of the PTQ, plays against the deck, and loses because he didn't realize that he needed to cast his Blasphemous Act quicker so that he didn't have, so he couldn't sack his guy to a Disciple of Bolas. And it was like, it's this thing that's like,
yeah, you would only need to have that happen to you one time, and then it would never happen to you again. I guarantee it.
It did happen to you one time.
Yeah, it's only happened to me one time, and it's never happened again.
Yeah, it was just an unfortunate circumstance in which it happened. But, like, the point of this is that, like, it's like he said, you don't have infinite time. So, like, they don't count differently. They all count. I would have never playtested against Lunar Force. In a million years. But I learned a lot about sequencing and, like, how, what, like, the cards in my deck. If you think about something like this, like think about the number of times that you lost to a Lamholt Pacifist. Did you take those as Lamholt Pacifist sucked? Or did you think about, like, is my deck not built to beat Lamholt Pacifist? This is a real question that I myself have asked myself, completely changed the way I built my ramp deck, like, and my deck was better for it. And this is something that you can learn in playtesting, you can learn reading articles, you can learn listening to podcasts like this one because I just mentioned it. You can, like, you're laughing, but you can learn this playing in events, playing against these decks. As long as you're taking the opportunity to actually learn and to actually think about why things are happening. Also, isn't Magic more fun that way?
I mean, different people get different things out of Magic. For me and you and Matt, and like most of our listeners, that's what we're trying
obviously
to get out of it.
That's why they're listening to this podcast.
For some people, it's just like, it's getting to play big giant creatures and pretend they're a wizard, right? Like, people get different things out of Magic.
I mean, I know that Matt loves pretending he's a wizard, but Matt, what were you going to say?
I mean, that is great. Don't get me wrong. No, I was just going to say, I think like all Magic content, like it's, I mean, we can speculate what our listeners are trying to get out of it, but I don't think that it's 100%. Like,
that's true.
We can't categorize every single person as like
that's
everybody
that's
that listens to this podcast wants what we want.
No, it's true. If you don't want that and I offended you, you know where to send your hate mail.
overall, like I think that like it's an important lesson to learn. Like if you have to do something in Magic to improve, at least make it be about improvement.
So for what it's worth, I mean, this is on topic but a little bit side from that.
Okay,
so
it wouldn't be a Matt Kling podcast without a tangent. Go ahead.
So you just brought up the does my deck lose to Lamholt Pacifist thing, and I feel like I actually made a crippling decision in my green white tokens deck in the end of the last season, because I assumed that everybody was kind of where I was at as far as like the levels go with green white. Like the decks were kind of getting bigger and bigger as it went to like compensate for the mirror, and as a result I actually made my particular green white deck incredibly weak to Lamholt Pacifist, especially on the draw, and I lost a lot of games of Magic in the mirror to Lamholt Pacifist and didn't even consider for a second until it was like way too late. Like after the last PTQ of the season, or PPTQ of the season, I was like, man, you know what I just did? I just like built my deck to where I could never beat a Lamholt Pacifist on the draw, and then kept losing to it. Like, I did this, I lost to it like 8 times in a row. And I never like once considered that maybe it's something I'm doing wrong. I kept being like, man, these noobs playing green-white just aren't on my level yet. They need to get to where I'm at so that I can beat
them.
They
just went back, right? They went to the correct level. And I think that it's perfect, right? You didn't take it as an opportunity to learn. You took it as an opportunity to criticize them.
I agree. Yeah, that's the point I'm getting at, is that like I looked down on them and I was like, you know what? Why are these people just like not with the metagame? You know, why are they so far behind?
Casey,
when really it was me that had adapted incorrectly.
Yeah. Casey, say something nice about Assault Formation.
So I am 0-1 against it. lifetime. So like if. It's certainly a like synergy based card, right? You have to build your deck around it. But when you're getting there, like it's what do you want me to say? Like
something nice. That's just factual statements.
I mean, for what it's worth, I think that Assault Formation is a very powerful card. The only flaw to the Assault Formation deck is that you need to draw Assault Formation, otherwise your cards
it's
are all kind
of
bad.
It's one of the 10 best green enchantments they printed in the last 2 years.
Is that true? That's a pretty bold claim. I would have to look, because, hold on, we just had a whole block of enchantment creatures.
Well, that's more than 2 years ago, right?
Was it? Was Theros more than 2 years ago?
Yeah, probably.
Okay, sure. So Corsair Crucifix gets to stay back there.
I was just giving you crap.
I know.
I love you.
Actually, both, like, in the games that he won of that match, he did not actually have Assault Formation in play either time at the end of the game.
That's fair.
So. There's something to be said about sometimes your opponent's just doing nothing, and it almost doesn't matter what you're doing.
that's how it felt.
I'm just saying
that
people are really mean to that guy at PPTQs, and I don't know why I like take it so personally, but like they're so mean to him.
So like hey,
You
weren't there, but like I always try to be nice to everybody. So like I tried to be very polite with him, but inside I was screaming. Like, so there's no... I'm not going
to
lie to you.
I do not know that Casey was mean to this person. I give Casey crap because he came home and that was the first thing he said to me. I was like, oh, how did your tournament go? I lost to Assault Formation. That's okay.
It's true. That happens. The whole thing.
But, like, I don't know. I think that, like...
For what it's worth, I've actually learned quite a bit playing against this person for what it...
That's what I was going to talk about is, like...
He actually does come up with really interesting synergies, and he doesn't ever use the internet for anything.
Hold on.
Everything is all his own.
Dude, the 1-4 unblockable guy, when he, like, went to the next PPDQ and was like, yeah, I put this in my deck, I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, he keeps adapting the decks every week, and they actually do get better.
Like, I'm like, holy crap, dude, that's, like, good tech.
Yeah.
Like, you have a 4-power unblockable creature, like, for 3 mana. That's good.
It certainly is.
But it's actually funny. When I thought about the way people treated that Assault Formation guy, when I played against that Lunaforce deck this week, that was my thought. Like, right when he did it, he played Lunaforce. My first thought was, here's a buy. And then I was like, no, I'm not going to think that way. Because, like, this guy could know something I don't know. And he did. He did know something I didn't know. And the second he played that Starfield Onyx, I was like, oh.
So I'd be very curious if that list, like, got posted to Reddit somewhere or something. Because a list very, like, almost... shockingly similar, just top 32 the open.
Yeah, took 18th place this week. So, like, so this guy was onto something.
What does Lunar Force do?
It's 3 mana for an enchantment that when your opponent casts a spell, sacrifice it and counter that spell.
So it's like an Arayo that, like, you have to sacrifice.
Okay, sure. It's like, okay, I get it.
And then with Starfield of Nyx, it recurs every turn.
Sure.
So it's Jace Emblem.
It's basically, deck well, building. Yeah, it's Arayo, right? Like the one that says their first spell is countered every turn.
I don't know what that is, but it's Jace Emblem.
Kira the Great Glass Spinner?
No, it's a flip card. If you cast 4 spells in a turn, it flips.
I see.
And then their first spell your opponents cast each turn are countered.
All right.
Bannon Commander, whatever.
There you go. Now the more you know. But overall, I think that, like, yeah, I think that it's just important to approach things a certain way. And that, like, if as long as you're doing that when you're reading articles, listening to podcasts, watching videos, all those things that we mentioned, you're going to find yourself improving. Don't forget that you can support the show by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. Our next Patreon goal is upgrading equipment. Casey wants a new mic stand.
Yeah, one that will hold my mic upside down.
So that he can be a radio host is the his exact words.
Yeah, that's true.
We'll probably film him doing something really embarrassing if we do get there. So,
no, we already are going to put him in, like, a really, like, dirty blazer and have him talk about Magic news. This is already we've already discussed this.
It is known.
Yeah, or was it green? Was it a green blazer on a green screen? Is that what we decided?
No. I think that it was going to be like a cheesy, like, Ron Burgundy maroon blazer.
Oh, okay,
nice.
I think you just want to drink scotch in front of a camera. And that's it. I think that's your only...
Yeah, that's the long dream, con, though.
Who doesn't want that?
We're on the extremely long con at this point.
I did this podcast for one reason. Where can people find you, Casey?
You can find me on Twitter at CCBloodthirst or on Facebook at Casey Tuna Bloodworth.
Matt Kling, man, it's been a while.
It has been a while.
I mean, it's not as long... But, like, you literally just did an episode on some great deck of history.
Splinter Twin, who was like 2 months ago.
Sure, yeah.
And but now you're back. You're ready to attack. And where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at the Witch Kling. It's pretty much the best place to find me.
The Facebook group, you're there.
Yeah. I'm on Facebook, yeah. You can find me by my name, so
you can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Howland. You can find me on Twitter at Spencer13H. You can find me on Reddit at Spencer13H. And you can join the conversation of this podcast by, you know, liking the podcast on Facebook, going to YouTube.com. Once we hit 100 subscribers, I can change the URL. So if you haven't subscribed on YouTube, I've never asked for it before because, like, it's whatever. But if you do have the time to go subscribe to our channel, we would appreciate it so that we can change the URL. You can't do that until you get 100 subscribers. And I also almost never mention the YouTube channel, but please go subscribe so that we can change that URL and spread that quicker. You can join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag WhatEverBeGood, going to reddit.com/r/ccmtg, and you join the Facebook group. Just ask for it. If you like the podcast first, it's very helpful because then I know you're not trying to sell sunglasses.
I mean, you can't round the value of a good deal on sunglasses to zero. That's just not fair.
You can join the clan by messaging me at Spencer13Dev on MTGO, or messaging Quentin at Urstripe. That's U-R-S-T-R-Y-P-E.
Nope. U-R-T-H-S-T-R-Y-P-E.
Oh, I missed the H. I apologize.
And the G, I think.
U-R-S-T-H-Y-R-P-E. I just messed that up. Well, how, what is it?
U-R-T-H, Earth, S-T-R-Y-P-E,
thank
Stripe,
you.
Earth
thank,
Stripe.
Thank you.
Just like it sounds. Like
Urstripe.
Urstripe.
Urstripe. Casey, what did you learn this week?
That maybe there's more competition for the top 10 green enchantments of the last 2 years than I thought.
Matt Kling, what did you learn this week?
You know, honestly, I just have been taking such a step back from Magic. I can't say anything specifically that I've learned about Magic.
No, this week on this podcast, today,
oh,
as we recorded.
What did I learn today?
Yeah, on this podcast.
Oh, that's toughy. Man, if I had known that there were going to be, you know, an exam, if I would know there was going to be an exam at the end, I would have taken
notes. It's the new
notes.
Ending segment. What did you learn on today's podcast? I learned that people bolt themselves in their Death Shadows deck.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I felt like there were a lot of really good points that I really did think about, but I just can't bring any to mind right now.
So you did feel like you learned something, though?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, cool. No, I actually felt like this is one of the most educational podcasts I've ever been a part of. So
yeah, I was hoping that, you know, since you felt like we've dialed it back, that we could bring it back for you when you came on. So. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate it. Don't forget to check out our sponsors at Oasis Games and Five Color Combo, who bring you your power rankings every week. You can check them out at fivecolorcombo.com. They sponsor the YouTube content. And honestly, I literally use their app every single day. You can check it out, I think, Magic Drafter, on both the Apple Store and Google Play. So thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you guys all next week. Oh my gosh, next week's the Pro Tour!
Woo!
What?